The major theme found in Parshas Vayechi is the blessings that Yaakov Avinu gave to each one of his children and to his two grandchildren, Ephraim and Manasseh, before he died. I'd like to, Mirtz Hashem, today focus in on one of the brachas to one particular tribe to raise a number of questions and perhaps to see on a deeper level what this bracha, what this blessing is all about, and the uniqueness and the role that this particular Shevet, that this tribe has in the entire spectrum of the Jewish people. The blessings begin with going in order of birth to first to Reuven, to Shimon, to Levi, then to Yehuda. And then Yaakov Avinu continues with the two other sons of Lehi Menu, with Zvulun and Yisachar. Torah tells us, Zvulun shall settle by seashores, he shall be at the ship's harbor, and his last border will reach Sidon. So Zvulun is really the aspect of the trade, the aspect of being able to make money, a parnasa. He is the one given the seashores, that's his portion. He then supports in that famous partnership Yisachar, who's described as a strong-boned donkey. He rests between the boundaries. He saw tranquility, that it was good, and the land, that it was pleasant. Yet he bent his shoulder to bear, and he became an indentured laborer. This is a brach of Yisachar, who's going to be involved in learning, taking the burden of Torah, the Yod-Ei Binah, the seekers of knowledge, the people involved in teaching and in learning is Yisachar. We then move on to Dan. Dan will avenge his people. The tribes of Israel will be united as one. Dan will be a serpent on the highway, a viper by the path that bites a horse's heel so its rider falls backwards. For your salvation do I long, Hashem, l'shuasech ha-kivisi Hashem. And then it moves on to Gad, who will recruit a regiment, will retreat on its heels, and the aspect of God being a warrior. It's the bracha of Dan, however, that I really like to focus in on. And then the Chumash continues with the other blessings. But I think by looking at Zvulun, Yisachar, and Gad, comparing it to Dan, I think we get a very clear sense of a number of questions that we need to understand in analyzing Dan's bracha. The first is to which animal Dan is compared. To be compared to a strong-boned donkey, to be compared to a lion or to a wolf, are very positive images and are understood in a positive light. The first question we need to understand is, what compliment is found in that a father is blessing his son that he should be like a serpent on the highway, like a viper on the path? It doesn't seem to be a very positive image of an animal. How are we to understand this imagery of a serpent, of a snake? That's question one. Question two is, we find that only by Dan's bracha, with no other bracha, that after Yaakov Avinu gives the bracha, he pauses for a moment as if and gives a special tefillah to Dan. For your salvation do I long, O Hashem, l'shuasecha kivisi Hashem. We need to understand, is what is unique about Dan, what is unique about Dan's bracha, that Yaakov Avinu feels compelled that only by Dan, that he offers a special tefillah, a special bracha to Dan for the Yeshua of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which we don't find in any other of the Shvatim, or the other tribes. Further, we need to understand that this statement of L'shuasecha kivisi Hashem is something that we are accustomed to say every night in Kriyat Shema. It's also fascinating that when we say it in Kriyat Shema, we say it three times, we switch around the order of the pasuk. L'shuasecha kivisi Hashem, kivisi Hashem l'shuasecha, Hashem l'shuasecha kivisi. Normally we don't move pasukim around. What is it about this pasuk which is so compelling that we say it every night, that we say it every night three times? We also, some people are accustomed to say it as well, as part of Tfil Saderech, as part of the traveler's prayer as well. Our final question on Dan, the first being the symbolism of being connected to a serpent, the second, the necessity for personal tefillah after blessing Dan. The third is to understand Rashi and the classical commentators' understanding of Dan's bracha. It's interesting, the other Shvatim are understood as the characteristic of the Shevet. Gad as being the warriors, Yisachar being the people involved in learning, Zvulun in terms of trade. Here, by Dan's bracha, Rashi says the following. A serpent on the highway, quoting from the Art Scroll Stone Chumash, Rashi and Ramban apply the words to Shimshon. Shimshon, we know, was from the tribe of Dan, whose single-handed battle tactics corresponded closely to Yaakov's description. Like a serpent leaving its lair to attack travelers and then slithering back to its hiding place, Shimshon weighed a personal, guerrilla-like war against the Philistines, catching them by surprise and going into hiding before they could counterattack. There's something unique about Shimshon that Rashi and the Mefarshim understand the bracha of Dan to be connected to Shimshon. Just to remind ourselves of the story of Shimshon of Samson, we know Shimshon's birth was prophesied by an angel to Shimshon's mother. He was a Nazir, a Nazirite from birth. And Shimshon was unique in the sense that he did not fight with an army. He fought single-handedly. He really integrated among the people, totally camouflaged. He married within the Philistines, clearly converting them first, and maintaining an identity as if being part of the Philistines to retaliate against them. As we know, the downfall of Shimshon was when he told Delilah his secret that his strength came from not cutting his hair. The Plishtim came, cut his hair, they put him in prison, they knocked out his eyes. And then that final scene, a very poignant scene, where they have this big party for their god, they bring Shimshon out to make fun of him, to mock the God of Israel, really, that they vanquished the big warrior of the Jewish people. They bring Shimshon out to make fun of him, and Shimshon asks the lad who he's with to please put his hands on either side of the beam since he can no longer see. And at this point, Shimshon's hair had grown back, and he davened such a powerful tefillah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, please God, remember me just this one more time. And in so doing, brings down the entire house, and he kills more people in that incident than he did in his lifetime. And that's how Rashi understands Vayipol Rochvo. So it's ride or falls. The allusion is to Shimshon's final victory, when blind and in chains, he pulled down the pillars of the Philistine idol temple and caused it to collapse, killing himself and 3,000 Philistines. Like a snake biting a horse and indirectly killing its rider, Shimshon struck indirectly at his tormentors. The third and final question we need to ask is why do Chazal understand Dan's bracha to be referring to a single individual? When all the brachas, even Yehuda, although it's referring to David HaMelech, it's really referring to the Malchus Beis David, the kingship of David, what is it about Dan that forces Rashi to move away from understanding it as the entire tribe of Dan and a quality of that tribe, and rather being very specific, pinpointing it to one particular era, not even one era, one individual from the tribe of Dan, and finding all the references within these psukim and these verses to this one individual? We need to understand a little bit more deeply what's underlying Rashi. What is he trying to teach us? What I'd like to try to work through Mirat Hashem today is to try to understand the connection between Shimshon and Dan, and thereby try to understand Rashi a little bit more deeply. In so doing, to understand for your salvation, do I long, O Hashem? Then to step back and to see it indeed on the level of the tribe Dan as a tribe in and of itself. And then to be able to see what lessons that we can learn for our own lives from this bracha. Clearly, the book, the work on Shimshon as a personality that really gathers all the sources together so beautifully, is a book called Samson's Struggle, based on the teachings of Rabbi Gershon Weiss from Staten Island that his students compiled together on the personality of Shimshon. And the selections we're going to be doing today on Shimshon come from the first chapter, the introductory chapter of his book, and then from one of the concluding chapters in the appendix of his book as well. And he notes that Yaakov Avinu had 12 sons, the progenitors of the 12 tribes of Israel, and each of these tribes was assigned a unique position and divine plan for the Jewish people. And to a large degree, the roles are described in the blessings that Yaakov gave to each of his sons before he died. Yaakov outlined the role that each tribe would have in the development of Jewish history and ultimately of world history until leading to the Messianic era. Within each of these tribes, the individual within the tribe then has the responsibility to carry out their unique role, their functions with the talents and abilities endowed by God for them, in order to be able to bring the tribe's journey and the tribe's mission to fulfillment. And he notes that there are rare occasions when an individual has a special mission in life that's so special that he's informed about it through divine revelation. Shimshon had such an awareness. The angel before he was born revealed to his parents that he was to have a special mission in life. And Shimshon as well realized being the only prophet. Shimshon was really the last of the prophets. He was the last of the judges. And he was the only judge from Dan. He recognized that the prophecy in the Torah of Yaakov Avinu really referred to him. And therefore, he learned these psukim very well to give himself a direction in how to really apply his personal role, his personal challenges in life. And that's why Shimshon really, in three distinct ways, parallels this model of a serpent, this viper on the path that Yaakov Avinu speaks about. We know that there are three characteristics of a snake which are significant. One, a snake does not usually attack a person unless he feels threatened. Two, a snake does not derive any pleasure from killing its victims. It's only used as a defensive weapon. And three, a snake camouflages itself so as to blend in with its environment. In fact, the shififon, the viper, indicates a tiny, thin snake that can hardly be seen. In reality, that really parallels Shimshon's war tactics. We know he did not attack the Philistines until they oppressed his people. Secondly, he did not derive any pleasure from killing his enemies, but most importantly, was the element of camouflage. Like the snake, Shimshon had to blend completely into his enemy's environment. The only way that a single unaided individual could wage war against an entire nation would be by resorting to guerrilla warfare of a most unique kind. And that's indeed was the model that Shimshon used. He said to himself, even if he himself would not be vulnerable, the Philistines would be free to take revenge against the populace at large. For every Philistine that he killed, they would retaliate by executing 100 Jews. In order to avoid retaliation, Shimshon had to camouflage his actions so perfectly that the Philistines would not even realize that their antagonist was fighting on behalf of the Jews. There was to be no indication whatsoever that Shimshon was taking up the cause of his compatriot. Quite the contrary to the Philistines, it would have to appear that he was a renegade and a traitor to his own people, so they think it was futile to retaliate against other Jews. And this is the way we need to understand Shimshon. Shimshon was an outstanding tzaddik. He willingly sacrificed his private life in the fulfillment of God's will. This is the aspect of Shimshon that we need to understand. That we can't, God forbid, look at Shimshon as some individual who was, you know, drawn to all these Philistines women and having one relationship after another and parties. No, God forbid. Shimshon was a tremendous tzaddik. Shimshon understood that he was fighting a tremendous battle. He was fighting a battle that Yaakov Avinu foresaw as the model of the snake, where he was working on guerrilla warfare. He was using the strength that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him, and he was using it in order to beat the Philistines in such a way that they would never retaliate against the Jews. It would look like that this was some traitor who just got caught up in different family problems with different Philistines and was retaliating in that respect. It was because of Shimshon's very dangerous, both physically and spiritually, role that explains our rabbis. That is why Yaakov Avinu said, "Lishuasecha kivisi Hashem, for your salvation I desire, O God," because he recognizes that Shimshon needed a special shmira, a special protection that no other tribe needed, that no other individual needed. What Shimshon did to go into the trenches, to really be part of them, to camouflage himself by them, and yet retain his tzidkut, retain his righteousness, was something that was going to need tremendous shmira, tremendous protection from God. And it's interesting that Ramosha Feinstein, Zatzal, in Drash Moshe, explains the opening verse on Dan, which is a difficult verse. Dan will avenge his people, the tribe of Israel be united as one. The Hebrew is Ke'achad Shiftei Yisrael, like the one of the tribes of Israel. The Ar Scroll Stone Chumash translates Ke'achad as united, but it really means as the one, which Chazal understand that Shimshon judge Israel just like the one, just like Hashem. Ramosha explains that we compare Shimshon to Hashem, so we should not judge Shimshon irreverently because of the many incidents recorded about him which appeared to degenerate him. We must know that everything he did was for the sake of heaven, although we do not understand many of his deeds. This is very much like the deeds of Hashem himself, many of which we do not understand, yet we have the faith that his works are perfect. This is a simplistic level of understanding Rashi, that the bracha is to a specific individual called Dan, that he should have the strength of Shimshon from Dan to be able to be victorious, acting like the snake in his guerrilla warfare. But this question still stands on Rashi. If this is so, why is it that what is unique about Shimshon that we're pinpointing a specific individual rather than the qualities of the Shevet? So that's why there's a deeper understanding, I believe, of what this Rashi is speaking about. And that's found in another Medrash on Lishuasecha Kivisi Hashem. The Medrash says, the patriarch Yaakov Avinu saw Shimshon and thought he would be Mashiach. When he saw him die, he explained, will even he die? Lishuasecha Kivisi Hashem, for your salvation I hope, O God. Very fascinating Medrash. When Yaakov Avinu is looking at Dan, he sees within Dan an individual who has the potential to be the Mashiach. He sees in Shimshon really the personification of what the Mashiachut is all about. And then when he sees the end of Shimshon, the way he dies, so therefore Yaakov Avinu pauses and says, he too will die, Lishuasecha Kivisi Hashem, for your salvation, O I long God, I long for the real Mashiach. And that's why some commentators point out is why God comes next. Because God, instead of Naphtali, because God is the tribe Chazal tell us that Eliyahu HaNavi is from. It says, if after he says, for your salvation, I long God, he then moves to the vision of Eliyahu HaNavi, who's going to come and be the harbinger of the Mashiach. What does this mean? That Yaakov Avinu saw that Dan had, that Shimshon had the potential to be the Mashiach. So we know that one of the ways to understand the deeper meanings of Chumash, of Medrash, is the way of Gematria, the numerical value. Now Chazal tell us that the numerical value for Nachash, for snake, is the same numerical value as Mashiach of 358. What does this mean? So Chazal tell us that it was known that Shimshon would follow his eyes, and therefore God made him a nazir so he would not drink wine, for wine leads to promiscuity. Shimshon was born with a powerful urge to follow his eyes. One's eyes are the first bodily organs in the sequence that leads to sinning, for seeing leads to temptation, as our sages teach. The eye sees, the heart desires, and the limb of action carry out. Let's try to understand Shimshon and his eyes and following the eyes and the counter of Nazir, what this is all about. And clearly it goes back, and the imagery of the snake go back to the beginning of the creation story. We know in the Garden of Eden, before the sin, Adam and Eve lived in a state of holiness in the absence of any evil inclination. They were only vulnerable to evil from the outside. And the external influence that represented this evil was clearly the snake. With skill and cunning, the snake convinced Chava that eating the fruit, man would acquire a greater field of choice and therefore be serving God on a higher level. How could Chava have made such a mistake in judgment? So the Torah tells us the answer. And the woman saw that the tree was good for food. It was tempting to the eyes. It was this aspect of the temptation to the eyes that became the downfall of man, and it was from then on that the influence and temptation and desire was a factor in all the decisions and in all their actions. In reality, if one had to sum up the individual's job, overall job in life, his man's purpose now became the conquest of the evil inclination within him. If he could do that, he'd return to the state of Adam and Chava before the sin. Our job in life is really to take that inner nachash, which at one point was external to man, that became part and parcel of man, and be able to extricate it from within us and be able to conquer it and vanquish it, and thereby return to the level of Adam and Chava before the sin. And this essay continues in Samson's struggle. From then on, it remained for a single individual, the Messianic King, to bring Jewry and ultimately all of mankind to spiritual perfection. To accomplish this, the Messianic King must first conquer his own evil inclination. The Mashiach must eradicate the Nachash within himself. He can only achieve this breakthrough with the assistance of God through the observance of his Torah. Then, like a brain sending out impulses to the whole body, he will influence Jewry through the invisible ties that our souls have to one another. In order for Mashiach to bring spirituality to the entire world, to be close to God, he will be the conduit for God's influence over all mankind. Any spiritual taint in him will act as a barrier between himself and God, and consequently clog the conduit of spirituality for the entire world. When Yaakov Avinu is foreseeing the future, he saw that Shimshon had the potential to be Mashiach. He would have the potential of sanctifying his eyes. If had Shimshon sanctified those eyes, he would have been able to rectify the sin of Adam and Chava. But because he had that potential to rectify that, to be the Mashiach, therefore he also had the strong urge to follow his eyes. And as he notes, and this is so important for our lives, where one feels weakness and temptation, and therein lies his greatest strength. The evil inclination is strongest in the area of a person's greatest potential strength for two reasons. One, it's the balance of free will. The stronger the tendency to sin in one area, the greater is the potential for greatness. And the second, the purpose of the struggle with evil is to bring out our hidden potential. By overcoming the challenge hurled at us, we bring out our hidden strength and come closer to perfection. And therefore, since Shimshon's challenge was to sanctify his eyes, he was given a strong urge to follow his eyes, as well as the protection of Nazirus to assist him in this battle. And he was aware of Yaakov's prophecy, and he dedicated his life to the eradication of his evil inclination by sanctifying his eyes. And to a very large extent, he succeeded. He climbed to a level of Ruach HaKodesh. The Shechina was as manifest upon him as a chiming bell. He was even able to perform miracles in full view of thousands of witnesses. Even when God left him, he was able to pray for great miracles. But Shimshon made the same mistake that David HaMelech made years later. He believed that having vanquished his base instincts, he was immune to temptation. He made decisions based solely on his pure eyes. But in reality, he had not reached the level of our patriarchs of being able to withstand one's evil inclination without God's help. Thereafter, the snake-like evil inclination continued to camouflage itself as a good impulse and delivered the final blow when Shimshon grew convinced that by yielding to Delilah, he was preserving household harmony. Shimshon failed in his mission. And therefore, Yaakov, when he perceived this, he said, L'shuasecha kivisi Hashem, to your salvation, I hope, O Hashem. He recognized that he had lost it. And therefore, it is not by accident that one of the things that the Philistines do when they conquer Shimshon is to knock out his eyes. It's almost a symbol. Why are they knocking out his eyes? But it's on a much deeper level, almost a symbol of why Shimshon was being vanquished. It wasn't only that the Philistines were vanquishing him, it was the symbol of why he lost the potential Mashiachut, which now explains Rashi. It's not just a question of this is Dan, one individual's name is Shimshon, but rather, when Yaakov Avinu is giving a bracha, he's giving a bracha which is speaking about every tribe's contribution to the Messianic goal. And therefore, Dan is therefore singled out in the personality called Shimshon, because he was the persona that represented what Mashiachut, what the potential Mashiach could have been, and therefore the focus in Shevet Dan is on that potential Mashiach on Shemshon. Just to round out this first level before moving to the second, there are some that know that that last verse, Lishuasecha Kivisi Hashem, was really not said so much by Yaakov Avinu, but as if foreshadowing what Shimshon himself said. As Rabbeinu B'chaye points out, as well as others, V'itachen lefaresh kehu tfilat Shimshon. This is what Shimshon said, that he was davening, L'shuasecha kivisei Hashem, please Hashem, remembering this one time, please Hashem, grant me salvation. And indeed, Rav Moshe Zatzal and Rash Moshe points out that this model of Shimshon being one who always asks for God for salvation, of L'shuasecha kivisei Hashem, is a wonderful model for our own lives. That Shimshon was the individual that whatever he did, he would say, as an example, when he slew the 1,000 men with the jawbone of the donkey, he said, you granted the salvation through your servant. Even after strength has waned, he still trusted in Hashem. Shimshon is the model that he recognized that when he was strong, he trusted in Hashem. When he lost that strength, he also asked God to grant it for him. He recognized that at all times, at everything we have, you have to always trust in God. It's the model of the Birkos Kohanim, the blessing of the priest, of Yivarecha Hashem Yishvarecha, may Hashem bless you and safeguard you. It's not just enough to be blessed with property, you also need the bracha of Shmira. You also need the bracha that God is going to protect this as well. L'shuasecha kivitzei Hashem, God, I long for your salvation. It's the model in times of need and in times of greatness to always recognize that everything comes from God. This is level one. Level one, that Dan's bracha, the snake, is really a model, was created by Hashem in an imperfect state. He created the northern side, but did not complete it. He says, whoever considers himself a deity, come and complete it. The purpose of creation, as we know, is the exercise of man's bechira, free will, and this could only be accomplished by including the possibility of man's judgment, error, and creation. By leaving the northern border of the universe unfinished, Hashem left room in man's mind for the worship of idolatry. The Maharal explains that it was impossible for the universe to have been created perfect, that there had to be imperfection in creation. Hashem is perfect, but he wanted his creation to leave room for doubt in man's mind. Hence, the northern side is symbolic of Hashem's seeming competition, idol worship. The fact that Dan always occupied the northern side is consistent with his position as the proponent of idolatry in the Jewish people. For from the north emanates darkness in the world. And we know this to be true, in our hemisphere at least, that the sun rises in the east, it moves to the south, it sets in the west, and it never reaches the north. The north is always the side of darkness. The north is always the side of difficulty. The north is the side of the room of darkness that allows the Bechira, the free choice, and therefore the room for idolatry. But here comes the key. Yaakov Avinu understood that in order for the full glory of Hashem to ultimately be revealed in the Messianic era, the involvement of the Shiftei Kah was essential. The greatest Kiddush Hashem will come about when all humanity perceives Hashem as the one and only true deity. It was thus imperative that one of the Shiftei Kah, one of the tribes, be involved with idolatry in Olam Hazeh, in this world, so that when the ultimate rejection of idolatry occurs, Shevet Dan will lead the way. For humanity's complete recognition of God to occur, the children of Yaakov must be directly involved. At this time, the northern side of the universe will be completed in order to demonstrate the sovereignty of Hashem. At the same time, the Shevet, which occupied the northern side, will teach humanity how to reject idolatry. The necessity for Dan to be the one involved in idolatry was in order for Dan to be in the future times the one who's going to reject it. The one who tasted it is going to reject it and therefore be able to say that indeed God is one. You need someone, so to speak, on the other side to come around and to be able to tell you that indeed, I've been there, I can tell you that God is indeed God, that the northern side will also be able to confirm that indeed the missing link is only God. And that's why it's not an accident. Everything, all the pieces fit together. We know that the archenemy of Esav, archenemy of Jewish people is Esav, is the embodiment of Avodah Zarah in this world, of all this evil, all this other side in this world. And we know, the Medrash tells us at the end of this week's parasha, that when Yaakov Avinu wanted to be buried in Maris Machpelah, that Esav objected and said that this really belongs to him. And there was a dispute that went with death, and he didn't understand what was going on here, and he just saw that his grandfather was lying here and wasn't buried. So Hushim ben Dan came and killed Esav. It is not by accident that the Medrash uses Dan's only son Hushim to kill Esav. This is to symbolize Dan's future as the initiator of the rejection of Avodah Zarah. And therefore, the supreme sacrifice, the acceptance of idol worship, which was made by Shevet Dan, Yaakov recognized this in Dan's blessing and wished him the strength to withstand this ordeal. Dan is blessed as a serpent because that's Dan's challenge in life, to take the serpent, to take the Avodah Zarah aspect, which they have this inclination for, and to be ultimately be able to overcome it. The only Sheva capable of withstanding this ordeal was Dan, for Dan had the strength derived from the Midas Adin, the divine attribute of judgment, which is associated with strength. Right, he was Dan, at the end of his blessing, that Yaakov Avinu says, "Lishua secha kivisi Hashem, I long Hashem for your salvation," because it's Dan and Dan alone who is in such a difficult, compromising position that needs the salvation of God, that needs that special bracha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Once again, one can understand on the level of Dan, as the Abarbanel points out, that perhaps it was Dan himself who was involved in having to ward off the enemies as the final back camp, that he davened, look, all the tribes have already moved forward, we are the one who has to deal with anyone who's coming from behind. Perhaps it was Dan themselves who said, "Lishuasecha kiviti Hashem, we long Hashem for your salvation." Having understood these two levels, whether it's Dan as the individual Shimshon or Dan as the tribe, both involved in this tremendous struggle to eradicate the Nachash, to eradicate that inner aspect within them as individuals and as a tribe, and therefore they need the special bracha of Lishuasecha Kivisi Hashem, we can perhaps now understand on our own personal level the message of Dan for our lives. In reality, each and every one of us is symbolized by what Dan represents, and that is the aspect of the Nachash, the aspect of the snake. In a real sense, all of us struggle with the snake within us. All of us struggle with its character perfection. All of us struggle to try to become better, more refined people. And therefore, all of us need that tefillah of Yaakov Avinu, of Lishuasecha Kivisi Hashem, for your salvation, O I long God. And therefore, not by accident, that before we go to sleep at night, when we're turning our souls over to God at the end of a long day, that we make this declaration that God, as we've gone through a difficult day and we prepare for a difficult future, we're asking you, God, for your salvation, do I long. And likewise in Tefillah Sederach, symbolically, when we go through the travels in life, that we ask God, it's for your salvation, do I long. So parenthetically, Rabbeinu Bachaya explains on a mystical level that the Kabbalists find in the three-word prayer mystical combinations of letters spelling the divine name that provide salvation against enemies. In order to arrive at the combination of letters yielding this name, the three words of this prayer must be recited in three different orders, and that's why we switch the orders around. But I think there's a deeper message here, a message for our lives, why we invoke this tefillah of Lishuasecha Kivisi Hashem every night and every time we go on a journey. The Nesiva Shalom, the Slomin Rebbe Tzatzal, notes, the Medrash says in Breishi Rabbah, that everything is bekivui, there are so many things that are dependent on longing, on desire. And he quotes the Targum Yonah's son that Lishuasecha kivisei Hashem is Yaakov Avinu showing the desire for the salvation of the Mashiach ben David, of the ultimate Mashiach that should come. And he notes that even if we are not roi, even if we're not deserving of Mashiach to come, if we have the desire, it is through the desire itself that can bring the Gula kosher. As we say in the Pasuk so beautifully, V'amar bayomahu, you'll say it that day, Hinei Elokeinu zeh, behold, this is our God. Kivinu lo, we anticipated him. We longed for him, and therefore v'yoshenu, and therefore we were saved. Ein b'yad Yisrael, we only have in our hands Elishi kavushi galema kadosh baruch hu. We have to long for God to redeem us. And it's b'schar kavo kivisi, it's through the reward of longing that indeed we can bring the redemption closer. And it's interesting to note that this aspect of redemption is something that we are asked a question about after 120 years in the Beis Din Shamala. A famous Gemara in Shabbos which points out that there are a number of questions at the Beis Din that the final judgment we are asked. The first is, Nasata v'natate b'emuna, did you do a give and take, usually understood in business, with faith? Did you establish times for learning Torah? And Tzipite l'Yeshua, did you long for the salvation? The Sefer Shalom explains in a very beautiful way, Nasata v'natate b'emuna, did you give and take in faith, does not reference the business dealing. That shouldn't be the first question. But rather, did you give and take in the aspect of emuna? Did you involve yourself every day in the aspect of faith as you do with business? Like you work so hard to ensure that your business is good and cut all these business deals. Did you put as much energy and as much thought into your emuna as you did into your business deals? It says that the question of Tzipita l'Yeshua, did you long for salvation? As a smack, the Sefer Mitzvot Katan notes, is really connected to this question as well. It's derived from the pasuk of Anochi Hashem Elokecha, I am the Lord your God who took you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. It's just like we have a mitzvah to believe in God, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, to believe, at least according to some, the existence of God. There's also part and part of that mitzvah is to understand that God, who has redeemed us once, will indeed redeem us in the future. But it's not just enough to know cognitively that God can redeem us. Tzipita l'Yeshua means that we have to long for this salvation. We have to desire this salvation. It has to be on our mindset that we want nothing else but to be saved. And that's why he says in conclusion, Shasipia l'Yeshua hisoda geula. The reason why Tzipita l'Yeshua is one of the questions that we are asked, it's because it's the soda geula. It's the secret of redemption. This is what Yaakov Avinu was teaching us. Lishuasecha kivisi Hashem. It's through the kivui, it's the kivisi, it's the desiring that can bring the Yeshua, the salvation, even before the right time. And he says, v'inyan zeh, this aspect of desiring so deeply that salvation should come, the sipita, the longing for redemption, v'inyan zeh shayach hein l'gulat haklal, is so true for the redemption of the community, v'hein l'gulat haprat, and likewise to the redemption of the individual. In any situation that a Jew finds themselves, it's not just enough to know that God can redeem us. L'shuasecha kivisi Hashem, we have to have longing for that redemption. We have to anticipate that redemption. Our mindset has to be Tzipita l'Yeshua. Our mindset has to be we're longing and desiring for God to extricate us from the difficulties that we find ourselves in. That's our focus. That's where we are at in life. What Yaakov Avinu was teaching us in the bracha of Dan, that yes, on one level, it's a bracha to Shimshon that he should be successful in his war aspects. Yes, on another level, it's the understanding that Shimshon had the potential to beat the Nachash, that evil inclination, and he should have been the Mashiach. L'shuasecha kivisi Hashem. We're anticipating the ultimate Mashiach. Yes, it's a level of Dan as a tribe who is involved in idol worshipping, who needs a special bracha that God should give them salvation, that they should be able to be the ones who are going to convince the world in the oneness of God. And yes, it's a reference to Dan, who was a mass saved, the gatherer, who needed God's help in being able to protect the people. But I think perhaps the deeper lesson for our lives is that Dan is every individual within us, that we all have this Dan, we all have this aspect of fighting the snake, and it's responsibility, the Dan. It's the responsibility of each and every one of us to fight the snake within us. But the way that we're going to be successful, the way we're going to bring ourselves back to the level of Gan Eden, the level of Geula, is one level and one level only. It's Liyishua Secha Kivisi Hashem. It's a tefillah we say every night. That God, Kivisi Hashem, I long for your salvation. I long for a perfected state. It's not just going to be enough to be cognizant of it, but my whole emotional psyche is this level of Sipika Lishua, anticipating, desiring the redemption. And if we take that inspiration to heart, that we always emotionally desire, Kivisi, have a longing for the salvation, so then indeed, an Yeshua's HaPrat, whether by the individual or Yeshua's HaKlal, by the whole, we will indeed be zocha to see the redemption on both a personal and on a national level even sooner than its appointed time.